We turn tonight to Hebrews chapter 10. And you might put a marker there. I think we'll turn away from Hebrews maybe just once or twice, but that'll enable you to come back rather quickly to the passage in Hebrews if you put a marker there. Well, a good number. We're on a Wednesday night. We're glad you're here. Glad the weather's cleared up for us. What a blessing, though. You know, Sunday night, I thought, well, when we meet Monday night, it's just going to be pouring down rain, and then Tuesday night even worse, and big wind, and neither one of them happened. We did have a little rain Monday night, but the Lord blessed us, and I'm very thankful for that, and I know you are, and we're just having good studies and good singing and good time together, and we're very, very thankful for that. Many really good sermons have been preached from Hebrews chapter 11. As men will take characters from Hebrews chapter 11 and build great studies from them. And these are great studies, and I'm grateful for all the good lessons that have been presented that way. But I don't know whether many of us have done very much to show how Hebrews 11 fits into the overall context of the book. And that's what I want us to look at tonight. How does Hebrews 11 fit into the whole context? Now, just briefly, and those of you who are in the auditorium class on Sunday morning will remember all of this. But just briefly, the Hebrew writer is facing a problem. These Hebrews have become Christians, but they're tending to revert to Judaism. There are a number of reasons why they might do that. It's the religion in which they grew up, and no doubt some of them still have family members who are still in Judaism, maybe giving them a hard time, maybe some even persecution going on. And you know, there was a lot about Judaism that was impressive. The temple, the high priest with those priestly garments were remarkable. And the feast that they had, just a lot of things were impressive. And they could see them. You could see the temple. You could see the high priest. And I can just imagine somebody pointing out the temple to a Christian and said, look at our temple, and where do you worship? We worship over in Joseph's house. Well, that might not sound very impressive. And of course, the Hebrew writer, the approach that he takes is to show that everything about the gospel is better than what they had under Judaism. Better is the key word to understanding the book of Hebrews. A better spokesman, better apostle, better high priest, better covenant, better blood. How many can we name? Better promises, better tabernacle. Everything's better. And of course, as Steve pointed out Sunday morning, the purpose of the writer is to say, why would you revert to Judaism when everything about the gospel is so much better? By the time we get to chapter 10, verse 35, the argumentation of the book of Hebrews is pretty well finished. And now there are all these admonitions, exhortations in the book to encourage the people not to revert. Let's start reading with verse 35 of chapter 10. Therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. We're not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. There's some words there we need to emphasize. First of all, the word endurance. Look again at verse 36. You have need of endurance. Go on to chapter 12. Look at verse 1. Therefore we also, since we are so surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of God. The Christian race is not a sprint. It's not a 100-yard dash. It's a marathon. And endurance is essential if a person's going to win that race. Now back to chapter 10. The second phrase that I want to emphasize is the term draw back. Look at verse 38. Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in them. But we're not of those who draw back to perdition, but to those who believe to the saving of the soul. These Hebrew Christians have a decision that they've got to make. Are they going to endure, or are they going to falter before they come to the finishing line? Are they going to believe to the saving of their souls, or are they going to draw back to perdition? That's what those Hebrew Christians are facing. And they had begun well. In your mind, can you see a runner and he's in a race and he starts well? In fact, he's leading the pack. But for some unknown reason, he just begins to slow down and just kind of falls out of the race. That's what the Hebrew Christians are in danger of doing. They have started running really well. Look at verse 32 of chapter 10. But recall the former days in which after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with sufferings, partly while you were made a spectacle, both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly while you became companions of those who were so treated. For you had compassion on me and my chains. You may have a translation to say the prisoners, and joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. You started out really well. You suffered joyfully. Even when they plundered your goods, you rejoiced in that. Are you going to have done all that in vain? Are you just going to throw that aside and quit the race? Is that what you're going to do? You need to endure. Don't draw back. Well, then let me ask you, what kind of faith did these Hebrew Christians need? They needed a faith that looked ahead, anticipated, hoped. They needed a faith that could see what could not be seen. Look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. All right, as we look then at the characters of Hebrews chapter 11, what kind of characters were they? They were men who were all, or and women, who were always looking forward, anticipating, hope. They're not looking back. They're not drawing back. They're always anticipating what's out there ahead of them. And they can see what cannot be seen. And I want us just to look at some of these characters and see that within those characters. I want to start with verse 22. I want to look at Joseph with you. Hebrews 11, verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Charlotte and I have been up north. We're coming back home. Charlotte's driving. I'm reading the Bible, reading from Hebrews 11. When a woman's driving, you always have something up in you. No. Now, Charlotte was a good driver. But I got to reading that, and I thought, why this moment in Joseph's faith? Weren't there some other great moments in Joseph's faith? What about when he resisted Potiphar's wife? Wasn't that a good, great moment of faith? That's not the one chosen. What about when he explained to his brothers that God sent him into Egypt in order to save a posterity for his people? Wasn't that a great moment of faith? And yet, the moment of faith that the Hebrew writer chooses is that moment when he requested that his bones be carried with the children of Israel to be buried in the land of Canaan. And it's not even highlighted. Go back to the book of Genesis. I want to go to chapter 50 with you. I want you just to observe how little is said about this moment of faith in Joseph's life. I'm looking at verse 26 of Genesis chapter 50. I'm sorry, verse 24. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of the land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. That's all that's said. And yet, as the Hebrew writer gives this who's who of men of faith of the Old Testament and what brought them to excel in their faith, the moment that he chooses is that time when Joseph asks that his bones be taken to the land of Canaan. But that was faith that was anticipated. Faith that was looking ahead. Joseph knew that God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that he would give them the land of Canaan. He knew that, and he believed that, and he was looking forward to that day. And he basically was saying, Egypt is not my home. That's remarkable. Here's the place where he had gained fame and fortune, second only to Pharaoh. But as Joseph looked on the land of Egypt, he didn't see it as his home. Canaan was his home. The people of Egypt were not his people. The people of God were his people. And he could anticipate the day when the people of God would be leaving the land of Egypt, be going to Canaan, to his home, and he wanted his bones to be taken when they went, so they could be buried, his bones could be buried in the land of Canaan. Now that's faith. What kind of faith? A faith that looks ahead, anticipates, hopes, and a faith can see what cannot be seen. That's the kind of faith that these Hebrews need. A faith that doesn't look back. A faith that looks forward. Well, they were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God made promises to those men. And they looked ahead. They looked forward to those promises. I especially want to mention Abraham. Of course, you surely are aware, most of you, of the three areas of God's promise. There was the nation promise. I'm going to make a great nation of you. It'll be like the sand of the seashore in multitude, stars of the heaven. And the land promise, I'm going to give you the land that you're in. I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. And then the seed promise. Through your seed, all nations of the earth will be blessed. A prophecy of our Lord, who through generations later would be born of the seed of Abraham. Abraham believed that. But his faith was severely tested. Look at verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Promise made to Abraham. A promise really that would be 2,000 years in fulfillment. But Abraham believed that. He looked toward that day and knew God would fulfill that promise. Had no question in his mind. And then God says, take your son, your only son, Isaac, offering on an altar. And Abraham's gone to do it. I wonder if Abraham asked God any questions. We don't have it recorded. But let us ask him questions. Abraham, where are you going? I'm going to Moriah. Why are you going there, Abraham? I'm going to offer my son on an altar there. But wait a minute, Abraham. Why are you going to do that? God told me to. But isn't this the son of promise? Hasn't God promised you all these promises, and especially that down through the generations, through your seed, all nations will be blessed? Yes. How's he going to do that, Abraham? If you're going to put this son to death, how's he going to do that? I don't know. And he didn't know. He thought, this passage said, that maybe God was going to raise him from the dead. But that never had occurred before. He didn't know. But the one thing he knew was it would happen just as God said. That's the kind of faith that Abraham had when God made a promise. A faith that never questioned. Looked ahead. Anticipated. Could see what eyes could not see. Well, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Go back to verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise in a foreign country, or as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Can you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob living in the land of Canaan? Living in tents. Foreigners in that country. It was theirs. Oh, they never received a bit of it. It was for their descendants. But they lived as strangers in that country. Why? They had absolute confidence. They looked ahead. They were sure of what was going to happen on down. They're not drawing back. And in fact, they could have drawn back. Look at verse 13. These, that's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. God's made you some promises. Through the eye of faith, can you see those promises? Yes. To what degree? They reached out and embraced them. So real were those promises to those three men that they're pictured as just reaching out and embracing them. Well, Abraham, you came out of the Ur of Chaldees. You're just having to live in tents in this country. Why don't you go? No, he's not going to go back. Are you with me? What kind of faith do these Hebrew Christians need? A faith that will not look back. A faith that sees what cannot be seen. A faith that looks forward to the promises that God has given. And here Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Here's Abraham. Here's Joseph. An example to them of those who never looked back, but always were looking forward. Always were anticipating. They had an opportunity to go back. No, they're not going to go back. What are you Hebrew Christians going to do? Are you going to go back into Judaism? Are you going to draw back? Or are you going to believe to the saving of your soul? Look at all of your heroes of faith that's found in the Bible. Look at those heroes. They didn't turn back. They kept looking forward. They kept reaching on. And they looked for a city that has foundation, whose builder and maker is God. Look at Moses. Verse 24 now, and we have the example of Moses doing the same thing. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Do you see it in Moses? Look at all Moses gave up. He gave up the position of being Pharaoh's daughter's son. He gave up the treasures and the pleasures of Egypt. Why did he give up all of those things? Because there was something greater out there that he was reaching for, that he had faith in. And he never looked back. He just kept pressing on. I like the way it is said. Look again at verse 27. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And you remember when he led the Israelites out of the land of Egypt, many of them looked back. They wanted the leeks and the garlic and the cucumbers, and never have figured out why they wanted cucumbers, but they wanted cucumbers and they wanted melons and they wanted fish, and they looked back. Moses never looked back. Always looked forward. Do you see how Hebrews 11 fits into the context of a people who are about to look back, people who are drawing back, people who are not enduring? And over and over and over in Hebrews chapter 11, here are people who refuse to look back, always looking forward in faith in the promises of God, seeing what could not be seen, and demonstrating right out of history the kind of faith that these Hebrew Christians needed. What did these people have in common? You know I like to say this. We were in a Bible class, I'd pull it out of you. Think about it. What did these people have in common? All of them recognized this world is not my home. Whether the world was the land of Canaan in the case of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or whether it was the land of Egypt in the case of Joseph and Moses, this world's not my home. They all anticipated, looked ahead. They all could see what could not be seen. They all endured whatever they had to endure in order to receive the promises that were out there. They received it all. And that's exactly what these Hebrew Christians need. And that's the kind of faith that we need. Folks, we live in a wicked world. Temptations lie all around us. Satan is doing his best to pull us back instead of our reaching forward. He's trying to pull us back into sins that we have been guilty of in the past. You know what happens? We become Christians. There are areas of weakness. Your weakness is not mine. Mine may not be yours. But every one of us has weakness or weaknesses. And when we first become Christians, we struggle. Maybe it's a bad temper that someone has. And he's just really bad to fly off the handle. And he begins to work on that. And he works hard on that. And he makes progress with that. But in time, he just gets tired. He gives up the struggle. He surrenders to Satan. He's drawn back. It may not be a bad temper. It may be bitterness. It may be hate. It may be the lust of the flesh. It may be any number of things that... But when the day comes, when we quit struggling, when we just give way, let sin reign in our mortal bodies. You remember the sermon on Sunday? When we reach that point, then we have drawn back, we have given up the fight, we have surrendered to Satan. Now, it may be that we will never totally conquer, even with the help of God, we may never conquer some of those old sins and weaknesses that we have. And we all recognize that. But one thing we can do, God can see us always struggling to get rid of that sin, to overcome that weakness, and turn and say, "Forgive me." But don't give up. There's too much out there to live for. God's promises are there. And through the eye of faith, we must see them and cling to them. Never turn them loose until the day when we go home and be with our Father. There's one more contrast that I want us to see that's here in the book of Hebrews. And that's a contrast between drawing back, remember the expression, and drawing near. You cannot draw near to God when you're drawing back from serving Him, from doing His will. Look at chapter 10. I want to begin, I believe it's with verse 19. Catch the expression, draw near. "Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest, by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which He consecrated for us through the veil, that is His flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water." Let us draw near. And what a blessing involved in this drawing near. Remember the old veil that separated the holy place from the most holy place? What happens when Jesus died? That veil was torn in two from top to bottom. Was that an indication? I think so. That now the way is open. When all of us can draw near. In the past, it was just the high priest. We talked about that, wasn't it, last night? It was only the high priest that could draw near. Now all of us can draw near. Now look at chapter 11, verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. That's from the New King James Version. If you have the ESV, the English Standard Version, it says, without faith, it is impossible to please him, for he who draws near to God must believe that he is. And let me encourage you, many of you no doubt have the English Standard Version. If you go back, many times when the New King James Version doesn't pick it up, there'll be draw near, draw near, draw near, draw near. I think at least five times in the book of Hebrews, draw near in the English Standard Version. What are the Hebrew Christians doing? Drawing back, leaving the Lord. The exhortation is, draw near. May God help us to learn the lesson that those Hebrew Christians needed to learn. Don't draw back. You know the word backslide? Don't backslide. And I would just ask you this simple question. Are you as strong spiritually today as you were 5 years ago? Or is it possible that somehow you've fallen back? If you have fallen back in the last year, 2 years, 5 years, then you have the same problem that those Hebrew Christians had. Where are you? Are you stronger today than you were 5 years ago? We need to all look at our lives. Think about ourselves. Are we struggling as we did 5, 10 years ago? Are we really making the effort? Do we really see the promises through the eye of faith? We must never draw back. But we must believe to the saving of the soul. I hope that's helpful. I love the study of Hebrews. And I hope we can see how the 11th chapter fits so beautifully in that context. And I hope we've learned. Don't draw back. Is there someone here who needs to obey the gospel? Or is there somebody here who has drawn back? You know you have drawn back. You know you're not the person that you were in Christ 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Why don't you come back to the Lord? Ask for the prayers of God's people. And make a new determined effort to reach on out to serve God and to be faithful to Him. We'd love to see you respond. We'd love to pray with you. We'd love to hear you confess your faith and be baptized tonight. Will you come? We stand and sing.